You're listening to the Professional Brotherhood Podcast, because when the alarm sounds, nobody cares if you're career or volunteer.
You're listening to the Firefighter Success Podcast. Join us as we learn from successful firefighters and fire service leaders on how to achieve excellence. When lives depend on us, success is our only option. Thanks for tuning in for another episode of the Firefighter Success Podcast, everyone. I am your host and the author of Firefighter Success, Jim Moss. I'm really pumped about today's guest because he is someone who is direct, honest, and pulls no punches when it comes to professionalism in the fire service. I've been a guest on his podcast twice now, and we always have great conversations. Brian Soller has been an active volunteer firefighter for the past 31 years. He currently serves as the assistant chief of the Rock Hill Fire Department and was their fire chief from 2018 to 2020. Soller also served as chief of the Monticello Fire Department from 2001 to 2002. Brian is a nationally certified level 2 fire instructor, nationally certified fire officer, an advanced swiftwater flood rescue technician and instructor. For the past 17 years, he has been a New York State fire instructor assigned to Sullivan County, New York. He speaks extensively on the promotion of professionalism in the volunteer fire service through his podcast and YouTube channel, The Professional Brotherhood. And lastly, he is the co-creator of the class, Setting Our Volunteers Up for Success. Chief, welcome to the Firefighter Success Podcast. So glad I could have you on.
Jim, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here. We've been trying to pull this together for a little while, and I'm glad it's finally working out. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I enjoy our friendship and all that we talk about and discuss. And we have a good time when we get to meet together. But first of all, I do want to say thank you so much for all your support with the Firefighter Success book. You have been one of my biggest supporters and champions, and I just want to say thank you. So I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, there's anybody that reads that book, there's no way not to support it and not to get behind it. It's just such a great read for anybody at any level in the fire service. And I loved every page.
Well, thank you so much. Well, let's get rolling. So I can't wait to hear your response to my favorite question that I like to ask all my guests. What is your definition of success in the fire service and in life?
For me, I like to keep it kind of simple. It's just achieving your goals, regardless of how big or how small they are. Many people, when they think about success, they think about, reaching the top of the mountain. You got to be at the pinnacle of your career to be successful. And that's not true. It's the smaller wins that are going to get you there. It's your commitment to the process that's going to make you successful in the fire service or in life. And, my primary topic and everything I speak about is really revolves around the volunteer fire service, because that's what I've lived for the last, 30 years, as you said in my intro. That in itself, to some people, they feel limited because they're a volunteer, and they shouldn't feel that way. They take the small wins, and just be successful at where you are in your career or in your life. If you're a new husband, be a good new husband. If you're a new dad, be a good new dad. If you're a new firefighter, be a good new firefighter and be happy with that. Don't worry about being chief. That'll come one day. Be successful at where you are now.
Yeah. And one time a guy messaged me on social media. He was like, "Hey, I want to make a name for myself in the fire service. What do I need to do?" And at first I just kind of chuckled at that question because, he was looking to be fire service famous. But if we focus on doing the right things for the right reasons, that credibility, that reputation, and quote unquote, making a name for yourself will happen. That shouldn't be your goal of making a name for yourself and being popular. Doing the right thing and treating people right, adding value to other firefighters' lives, to your family's life, to your friends' lives. I mean, that's what's primarily important. I love that you touched on just setting goals, achieving them, and focusing on the small wins, the small victories. That's just so important. Instead of, you know, having this huge lofty goal of, hey, I want to be chief someday. I'm going to be chief. Well, I mean, if that's what you're primarily focusing on, it's going to be a long road. And like you said, we really need to focus on the small wins, the small victories, and making sure that we're climbing up the ladder slowly and not running up it, not trying to take the elevator to the top.
Yeah, so many people are in such a rush to get to the next step, mm-hmm. you know, that they don't become successful in at where they are, at where they currently are, you know, and then they wonder why, as they advance, you know, either through the fire service or through life, they wonder why, you know, why they're missing pieces, you know, why they're not doing that particular job to the best of their ability. Well, it's because you didn't become successful at the job you took on prior, mm-hmm. you know, you didn't meet those goals prior. And it's, you know, I don't know why that is. I think some people get hung up in the, you know, we're everything is so in our face today with social media. They see other people and they want to gravitate towards, you know, that mountaintop. Well, listen, you don't get to the top of the mountain if you don't stop at, you know, mid station. And mm-hmm. that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you want to be a good officer, be a good firefighter first. If you want to be a good driver, be a good backup driver and really learn, you know, the role first. You want to be a good chief, you know, whether it's a shift chief, battalion chief, whatever, be a good company officer, you know, and really focus on your current position. You can look to the next position, but really focus on your current position and be the best at that you can possibly be. So what would you say are the non-negotiable qualities of successful firefighters?
I think the first non-negotiable quality is just being teachable, right? And being willing to learn. Every single day you can learn something, whether it's being around other firefighters or picking up a book or reading an article online or speaking to somebody like yourself. You learn something every single day. So you have to be teachable throughout your entire career. And that kind of goes back into that whole success thing that we just spoke about, right? If you're mm-hmm. always absorbing, you're always learning, you're always listening, you're taking, you know, points from all the just great people that are going to be around you throughout your fire service career, you're like a sponge and you've got to be teachable. I mean, that's the first and foremost. I put that when I looked at, you know, some of the stuff you sent me, that I wrote that one in caps and bold, you know, that was teachable. You know, that was the big one for me. Passionate. You got to be passionate about the job. I love being a firefighter. You know, it doesn't matter to me that I'm not compensated for being a firefighter. I love what I do. I've always loved what I do. Are there highs and lows? Absolutely. Are there days where, you know, I'm like, ugh, why am I still doing this? You know, sure. There, absolutely. You know, and somebody's lying to you if they're telling you there's never days like that, you know, but, you know, being passionate about it, loving what you're doing, is just extremely important, and it helps propel you through your career. It helps you to continue to be teachable. It helps you to continue to learn because, you know, of the way you feel about the service and how, you know, being a member of the fire service not only affects you, but affects so many people throughout your journey in life that you touch, you know?
Yeah.
And you don't even realize that because we all know you're not going to get a thanks for every person in life that you touch, but you know, being a part of this journey, you're just going to touch so many people in so many different ways and maybe, you know, make an impact on lots of folks along the way as well. And you can't do that unless you're passionate about the job. And then it leads into my next one. My next quality was, which is committed. So you gotta be, and I kind of feel like I'm taking words out of your book when I'm saying this, but these are all, this is why I bought into that, you know, as much as I did, because these are the ways I've felt for years, you know, of being passionate, being committed, you know, just absorbing it all and being good at it and wanting to learn every day. And then, you know, as we get better, as we learn more, and this was probably one of the hardest things for me. And I tell people all the time that the chief and the firefighter that I am today is drastically different from the chief that I was 15, 18 years ago, whatever it was, is humble. You know, you know, just being humble, realizing that, you know, other people could be where you are. Nobody likes a big ego. Nobody likes big bravado. Nobody likes people that, you know, stand on their soapbox and me it all the time. You know, be humble about, you know, where you are and what you've achieved.
Yeah. And that's my next question. And I'm glad you talked a little bit about being the chief and being humble and being able to, you know, see others' perspectives and not have a big ego. But that is my next question. So I know you're really passionate about leadership, but what would you say are the essential qualities for successful leaders in the fire service?
You know, I think you can take all the words that I just used for being, you know, for being successful and just move those to this question, because
right. Be teachable, yeah, be passionate, yeah, committed, be humble.
Yeah, absolutely. They all tie into leadership. Right. And the only thing, you know, the only thing I would probably add, is be willing to listen. You know, I know so many people that get in leadership roles, regardless of what that leadership role is. And it's like, all of a sudden they shut their ears off. You know, they don't hear what's going on around them. They think, oh, I'm the chief now. This is how it's going to be, or I don't need to listen to anybody else. That's not true. You know, that's not true. And again, these are the things that I have learned over the years. And after looking in the mirror and saying, hey, you know, where do you excel and where do you suck? You know, but you've got to do that. Right. But being willing to listen to everybody, you know, and I say this a lot because I'm very fortunate. I'm very blessed in my station that I'm at now. I've got a great group of firefighters that age from 16 years old to guys in their 70s that have held leadership positions, have not held leadership positions. You know, they're formal leaders, informal leaders, whatever you want to label them. Every one of those guys and girls, whether they're a brand new probie at 16 or somebody that's in their, you know, 70s and has been around forever and just comes out and, you know, helps around the firehouse or directs traffic or does scene support or whatever they do, every one of them brings something to the puzzle. Every one of them brings something to me and to the organization that we can all learn from. And if I'm not willing to listen to that, if as a leader, you're not willing to listen to that, you're not going to be successful.
Yeah. Yeah. So many times I've been on a fire scene to where there might be a little nuance about the call that I don't know about, but, you know, my driver or, you know, the senior firefighter, even the probie, the new guy, has been like, oh, hey, yeah, I saw this the other day and this is how you work this out. And it's like, oh, yeah. I mean, that I always preach within my own company. It's all about the team. It's all about, we're here for each other. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's about us working together. And when we as individuals are successful, the whole entire team is going to be successful, and vice versa. When the team's successful, it's going to represent each of us individually. We're all going to be successful. But I love what you said just about leaders being willing to listen. And like you said before, it comes back to being teachable and being humble, right? Once we think we know it all, we're going to be humbled pretty quickly with what we don't know. And that can happen time and time again in the fire service. Another thing I'll add to what you said about being willing to listen to everyone and everyone's perspective as leaders, make sure you're not the one who's talking all the time, you know? If we're talking all the time, then we're not listening. And we're, you know, if we're listening to our own voice all the time, then we're not hearing others' voices and what they have to say.
Sure.
So, and that can go for the probie too, you know, listen a lot more than you talk.
Yeah. And listen, and you have to be willing, you know, part of being humble is being willing to say, I don't know when I don't mm-hmm. know, you know, look,
right.
I definitely do not know everything there is to know about the fire service, right? There's some things that I excel at and I think I am good at. And then there's some other things that I know that I'm not good at. And if somebody asks me a question, and you know this as an instructor, right? Because it's like instructor 101, they always tell you, you know, don't make something up, right? If you don't know, say you don't know and say, you know, be honest and say I'll be happy to get you the answer, but I don't know the answer to that question. Right. That's just not an instructor thing. That's a leader thing. That's an everyone thing. If you don't know, don't fake the funk, because people are gonna read right through you. You know, people are gonna read you like a book, like they say.
Yeah. If you want to lose credibility, that's probably the fastest way to do it, is to make up something that you don't know, instead of saying, hey, let's go look it up, or let's check it out and investigate it a little bit and let's find out together.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know. Or hey, I screwed up. I mean, look, it happens, you know, and people will respect you a lot more for just admitting that than not.
For sure. For sure. So what advice would you have for all the aspiring officers out there?
I think that probably the biggest piece of advice and you know, staying in my lane and talking volunteerism and the volunteer fire service, don't rush. You know, the problem, one of the big problems we have in the volunteer fire service is recruitment and retention, and you hear about it all the time, you know. So and because there's, you know, because in some areas of the world there are recruitment problems, that means if we don't have a lot of firefighters, that means we don't have a lot of people striving to be fire officers. So we have these young guys and girls with maybe not a lot of education, not a lot of knowledge under their belt, ranking up very quickly and rushing into positions that they're probably not ready for yet. And you said it the best before, right? Before you can become a good lieutenant or whatever your bottom rank is in your agency. And I think this crosses between, you know, career, volunteer, paid on call. Before you can become a good lieutenant, you got to be a good firefighter.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face it, I'm not a good test taker. I know lots of people out there that are great test takers and don't need the basic knowledge of something. Like, they can just study a book and excel at a test mm-hmm. with zero hands-on knowledge or
They're kind of like savants.
right. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, you gotta be good. It's about that whole succession thing again, being successful, you know, be a good firefighter first, then become a lieutenant and be a good lieutenant, you know, and so on, you know, as you rank up, you know, be good at your job and focus on being good at your job and looking at what the next job may be, you know, mm-hmm. and all right, how do I prepare for that now before I get there? And the biggest thing that I see, again, in my world is you've got to realize, if you're aspiring to be a fire officer, all right, it's more than different color collar brass. It's more than a different color hat. It's more than bugles. It's more than a different color dress shirt, whatever it may be. You are now responsible for others. All right. More than you are when you're just a rank and file firefighter, right? Obviously, we all feel some responsibility for our brothers and sisters, but once you decide, hey, I'm going to be a lieutenant, or hey, I'm going to be a captain or an assistant chief or what have you, you know, and as you rank up, you become responsible for more and more people. And you need to realize that your crew, the people that you are leading, you are now responsible for all of them, not just yourself. And when you get to the rank, you know, when you put on the white hat, you might be responsible for an entire organization.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're aspiring to get to that level, you need to realize it's more than just what you're seeing, right? Mm-hmm. It's more than the person that you're looking at. It's more than, you know, it's more than Jim Moss and Brian Soller who wear a certain uniform, right? It's what do I have to do to get to that position and prepare for that position? And then what do I have to realize comes along with that position?
I love that you said that, because I just had a firefighter on my crew who just studied nonstop. I mean, put countless hours in for the lieutenant's promotional exam. And it's very rigorous. There's four different parts to it. And, you know, I helped him through the different steps of preparing for it. And he was successful. He got promoted to lieutenant. And then I said to him after he got promoted, I said, all right, are you ready for the real work to begin?
Sure. Yeah.
And you are so right when it comes to truly realizing as fire officers the weight of responsibility that we have, especially if you're doing it right. You know, anybody, sure, any fire officer can coast along and be a manager and just kind of sit back and do the bare minimum requirements of the job, right? Sure. But if you're going to be a true leader for your crew or your organization, it should be hard. It's not going to be easy. And you should really realize the true weight of developing your people professionally and also personally to become the best that they can possibly be.
Let me just add before you move ahead, let me just add one more thing before the thought disappears. I can't talk for all parts of the world or the country, obviously, but I know in New York and especially in my area, a lot of the agencies have, you know, requirements in the volunteer world for people at, you know, who want to become a lieutenant. And in New York, there's a class called Fire Officer One, and it's, you know, based on the NFPA. So it should be, you know, pretty standard to the rest of the US at least. What I say to firefighters all the time is, because usually that's a requirement for them once they get the position, I tell them, you should be looking at that and you should be getting involved and taking that class before you get the position. Mm-hmm. Because one thing you're going to realize sitting through that class, however many hours it is, and it escapes me right now, you're going to very quickly realize how much you are now responsible for.
Right.
Right. And you need to know that. You need to know that going into the job, not once you have the job, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. Going back to what you said about your first answer, don't rush. And I think, you know, you framed that within the volunteer fire service, but I think it's universal for every walks of life in the fire service, whether career or volunteer. And my fire department, we have a 5-year minimum requirement. I got promoted when I had 7 years to lieutenant, but honestly, I think it should go up to 10 years, at least speaking for my fire department, because the amount of things you really need to learn and know, and the experience that comes with that, and the amount of mentorship I believe it takes to be a successful fire officer within at least my own fire department, I think that that process should be at least 10 years minimum of experience, because there's also life experience that comes with that too, right? I mean, say you get on the job when you're, you know, 18 or 20 or whatever, and then you're going for a lieutenant when you're 23, 25. Not to say that, you know, you're not going to be a good fire officer, but there's something to be said for those who are, you know, a little bit older and have a little bit more life experience. Because as we know, interacting with our people and the public, you know, that's one of the most important aspects of good leadership, is knowing how to navigate those waters. You know, the personnel issues, shall we say, and knowing your people, that's really important for us as fire officers. So you nailed it on the head. Don't rush. There's no huge rush to make lieutenant or captain before anyone else. You know, just focus on developing yourself and preparing yourself for the position as much as you possibly can.
Yeah. You know, I always find years of service requirements interesting, because let's face it, in any part of the world, doesn't matter where you are. You could be in the FDNY, you could be out in the Midwest somewhere. I mean it's, you know, years of service and length of service is going to vary. It can vary within the same agency. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're on a busy engine or truck company in the middle of Manhattan or the Bronx, where you're running all day long, you're going to gain a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge in a very short amount of time. Right. But you put that same person out on, you know, I don't know, out in Staten Island for 5 years, and they're probably not going to gain the experience and the knowledge as quickly as the other person. So it's, and that transcends to, you know, all over, I believe, you know, it's years of service can be very, very interesting, based on where you are.
Yeah, I completely agree. So, probably what you're best known for is promoting professionalism in the fire service. And you have said, and it's on your website, a paycheck does not make you a professional. How you approach the job does. I love that statement. And I want you to talk to our audience about what professionalism really means to you, and specifically when it comes to being a professional firefighter.
Everything that I've done over the last year, regarding the podcast, the social media platform, you know, all of it, it all came from this promotion of professionalism. And what really got me going on this was seeing, you know, how many websites and Instagram pages and Facebook pages were dedicated to highlighting all the unprofessional things that are happening primarily in the volunteer fire service. And realizing that while people get all upset with this and annoyed with it, and, you know, they get on there and they argue and they comment and what have you, realizing that lots of times we are our own worst enemy, right? People are not creating these posts. They're not staging these pictures. These are like real life pictures. These are real life events that are happening out there in the world. And there's a lot of unprofessional stuff that goes on. That's where everything came out of was that, you know, we need to have a culture of professionalism, and the word professional is typically reserved for our career brothers and sisters, but it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter. And that's where the paycheck thing came from. I also often say that, you know, when the alarm sounds, nobody cares. Nobody cares if you're a career firefighter or volunteer firefighter. They expect somebody to come and take care of their emergency. Mm-hmm. So being professional is extremely important, right? Regardless of whether you're getting compensated for what you do or not, right? Because nobody cares. It doesn't matter if you're in my county in upstate New York and in the farthest reaches of my county where you get maybe 10 calls a year, those 10 calls are extremely important to somebody. Mm-hmm. Right. And we're not going to function properly if we don't take our training seriously, if we don't take our job seriously, if we don't realize that there's no difference between us and somebody that does this every single day as a job, that we still need to be held to the same standard. We still need the training, do we appear like professionals? Do we look like professionals? Do we handle ourselves like professionals? Or do we show up and jump off of a piece of fire apparatus and look like a bunch of circus clowns? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not right. It's not what people expect. It's not what the citizens expect. So, you know, that's why I'm so passionate about it. And look, I know there's nuances, you know, with the volunteer fire service that make it difficult, but we need to hold ourselves to a higher standard. And that's why I was so passionate and so enthralled with your book, right? Because there were so many nuggets in there that could help somebody say, hey, look, this isn't just Soller talking on his podcast. Look at this book. Some of the same things are in there. They're in different words, but they're in different words than he said, but they're in there. And, you know, obviously this means something, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Like this means something, this whole professionalism thing. Like, people really do depend on us, and we really do need to be great at this and great at what we do.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I put in the book, specifically the term professional firefighter. And I put a big asterisk next to it. And it says down at the bottom at the footnote, you know, being a professional does not mean that you are paid firefighter. Right, right. It just means the way you carry yourself and the service delivery that you give your citizens. That's what makes you a professional.
If you read the definition of professional, one of the definitions is a person competent or skilled in a particular activity.
Yes.
That's the one I use. A person that's competent and skilled in a particular activity. This activity happens to be firefighting. This activity can happen to get you killed if you're not good at it, right? So you know, professionalism, while some people, you know, get a little offended when I put the word professional before volunteer, I'm not looking at that definition. You know, I'm not looking at that this is your primary paid profession. I'm looking at it as somebody that needs to be competent and skilled. And
yes,
if you're going to do this job well, right, you need to be competent and skilled.
100%. You nailed it on the head. So as we mentioned in your bio at the top of the podcast, you're also the co-creator of the class Setting Our Volunteers Up for Success. So tell our audience a little bit more about that offering and how they can get it at their fire department.
So the Setting Our Volunteers Up for Success program, again, kind of came out of everything we're doing with the Professional Brotherhood. And I have a good friend of mine, one of my best friends, who is also a fellow instructor with me. We only met 5 or 6 years ago, maybe. I do some part-time EMS work. I've been an EMT for over 25 years, but about 5 years ago, I just started working a little bit per diem just to keep my skills up. And he was my training officer. It's my buddy, Chief Tommy Andershack. And we just hit it off instantly. He's a little younger than me. He's in his mid 30s. I'm in my, sad to say, 50s already, but
you don't look it.
I appreciate it, but yeah, he's in his mid 30s, and we just instantly hit it off as far as our outlook on the fire service, our outlook on a lot of things, on life. And and he is obviously at a different stage in his journey in the fire service than I am. Recently became a career guy. He's only been on a few years now, longtime volunteer, assistant chief in the volunteers. But anyway, we put this class together, and we're both instructors. We both have the same teaching style, you know, very, very passionate, like to be in front of the classroom, move around a lot, you know, definitely not the read from the PowerPoint types of guys. And we put this class together again, because we saw a void. You know, lots of people, there's lots of people out there talking about the problems of the fire service, mm-hmm. specifically in the volunteers, recruitment and retention. You hear it all the time, recruitment and retention. Like it's like a broken record. There's so many different things out there on recruitment and retention, but we didn't see many out there telling people how to do this better, right? Why is there a problem with recruitment and retention? Like why are we not bringing in new people? And more importantly, when we get new people, why are we not keeping them? You know? Mm-hmm. So this class, we talk about recruitment and retention. We talk about mentorship. We talk about promoting professionalism. We talk about leadership. You know, we talk about all the things that directly involve making somebody successful, setting somebody up for success within an organization. Look, I remember what it was like to be the brand new guy walking into the station. Thankfully, there were some friends of mine from high school that I knew when I got there. But I remember how weird it was walking into the firehouse for that first call, mm-hmm. 30 years ago.
Right.
You know? And we're not great at bringing people in and setting them up for a successful future. So these are all the things that we talk about in the class. And, you know, COVID hit us obviously right in the middle of our idea and putting it together like other things. So our first go around, New York State was gracious enough to have us for one of their first virtual conference. And we did a very, very, very short version of it for them. But now we're getting out on the road, and we did our first in-person one a few weeks ago that went really, really well, which is great to see. And we've got some other inquiries. So, you know, as far as getting us out there, we're new to this, to this part of it, you know. I'm sure you experienced the same thing when you and Dan started going out with your fitness stuff. Mm-hmm. We're willing to go really anywhere. Anybody that wants to hear the message, we're willing to come to you. We'll do it as a 3-hour, evening or morning class, kind of like a mini seminar, or a full day session. We've obviously got plenty of things that we can add into the program to fill a full day. It's interactive. Like I said, neither one of us like to just sit there and talk. We like to hear some feedback. We like to hear, you know, what the problems are that other people are facing. And, you know, maybe we have some life experiences that can help with that between the two of us. Again, maybe we'll learn something and we don't have an answer. But we try to make it interactive and, you know, get people up and get people thinking about how they could do things a little differently in their organization. So, yeah, you know, we're ready to hit the road, and really, it just takes a email or a text message or a Instagram message to say, hey, we're interested, and we'll work out the details.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like an awesome class, and I'd love to take it someday if I'm in your neck of the woods or if you're in the St. Louis area. You know, I'm definitely going to check it out. So one of the topics I love to discuss is overcoming adversity, and I know that you are no stranger to adversity. So tell our listeners about the health challenges that you've had to overcome and what you learned from dealing from them.
Yeah, we could talk for a while on this one. So I'll try to give the reader's digest version. geez, where do I even start? So, several years ago, and I don't even know how it came up. I think it just came up on a visit for my annual physical. And I actually think it was my firehouse physical that kind of started this journey. Nurse, or I believe it was a nurse at the time, heard a murmur in my heart when they were doing the physical, and said, hey, you should, you know, we hear something that doesn't really sound right. You know, you should probably go get checked out, go to a cardiologist, what have you. And I did, you know, you got to take these things seriously. So I did, and ends up I had mitral valve prolapse. Not a big deal. I mean, people live with it. I obviously had it for years and years, didn't even know about it. My brother has it, didn't know that. He didn't know that until I was diagnosed, and then he went and got checked out and he had it. I you know, would go for yearly checkups and whatever and just monitor it, and everything was fine. Somewhere along the way, my dad just turned 75. He's run the New York City Marathon. He's always been in great shape. Doesn't look like he's 75. He had a heart attack. Mm. and thankfully he survived that heart attack. But I'll never forget, you know, everybody's reaction. You know, what do you mean your dad had a heart attack? Guys like your dad don't have heart attacks, you know, because, right, you know, they're looking at him and they're looking at his stature and his, you know, how active he is and the things that he did. And they're like, and I'm like, yeah, he did. That was a game changer for me personally, because I realized that, you know, I had this other issue that I'm monitoring that the doctors tell me isn't a big deal. But I realized that Mom and Dad blessed me with great metabolism. And when people look at me, they're like, oh, you don't have a weight problem. You don't know what it's like. You're healthy. Well, you know this, Jim. I mean, look, healthy Right. Healthy isn't what you look like. Right. Exactly. Right. And that's why I always tell people that I was blessed with great metabolism. Look, when I was 16 to 18 years old, I lived on McDonald's. That's not healthy.
Right.
You know, I was a kid with a driver's license, and you know, that's where I spent my time. If I wanted to eat, that's where I would go. I was not healthy, and my dad's heart attack, really made me look at myself, and I said, you know, I've got to change what I'm doing here. I need to start exercising. I need to start paying attention to what I'm eating. I just need to put myself on this journey of being better, right? Looking in the mirror and realizing that just because I'm thin doesn't mean I'm in shape, and it doesn't mean that I'm healthy. I started with like at-home fitness programs and just got really immersed in that community. And honestly, that's where the whole social media thing started for me, with my personal page, because I started sharing my fitness journey, you know, trying to say, hey, listen, you know, firefighter fitness, you know, kind of like you and Dan, firefighter fitness and Kara, you know, it's important, you know. You guys need to realize that what you're doing is not normal, right? It's taxing on the body. It's, you know, you need to be prepared for it. So I started sharing my journey. Well, in the middle of all of that, I, out of nowhere, I thought I was sick. I went to the doctor, they put me on antibiotics. I went through the antibiotics. I came off of it. I was still sick. Ends up that my heart valve had gotten infected.
Mm.
And I ended up in the emergency room. I ended up being transported down to New York City. They thought they were going to do emergency surgery on my heart valve. I skated that, ended up coming home. They told me to monitor again, but it's something I never stopped monitoring. And my cardiologist finally convinced me a few years later. She said, look, you're in good shape. You're young still. This is something that's not going to go away. You need to get this taken care of eventually. And you're probably better off doing it now when you're 48, 49 years old and you're in great health and in good shape and you're going to recover quicker than waiting until you're in your 60s when it's going to be emergent and the recovery time is going to be longer. So end of 2019, I'm probably in the best shape of my life at like 49 years old. I think I was, ran multiple Spartan races that year, all kinds of obstacle course races going into September, 2019, I went in for open heart surgery. Never had a surgery in my life. And listen, if you're going to go big out of the gate, I guess go big. Right. So I went in for open heart surgery and they repaired my heart valve. And 2 weeks later, I was back to work. Probably a month later, I was back at the firehouse and in full swing doing everything I was doing before. You know, so the moral of the story for me and the message I try to share is I wouldn't have been able to go through that. I wouldn't have been able to recover from that, as quickly as I did and bounce back if I wasn't, in the shape that I was in, if I didn't take care of myself. And look, I'm not a CrossFit athlete. I'm not you're not going to see me on TV doing anything spectacular. I just take care of myself, right? I try to work out, at least 3 times a week, more like 5, but you know, I try to stay active and it's such an important message. And you've been sharing that message for years. So I kind of feel like I'm talking to the audience, but I kind of feel like I'm talking to the wrong guy.
No, you're talking to the right guy.
I'm talking to the right guy. I know. But it's about, just overcoming these challenges and realizing that the things that you do to prepare yourself for these challenges are going to help you to overcome these challenges.
Exactly. And I think it's so important to note that this issue was found during your fire department physical, your annual physical, which are so, so important. I know there's lots of fire departments that don't have mandatory annual physical examinations, but they are so important to find issues like these, because, you know, we've heard countless stories of firefighters who haven't gotten physicals and they find out that they have some type of cardiac issue or something like that. And then they die in the line of duty, which is so unfortunate. We can't find everything. We can't catch everything and fix everything. But, if at your own fire departments, if you're out there listening, if you don't have annual, NFPA 1582 specific medical evaluations, please, you know, petition for that, fight for that, because they are so important to correcting and finding issues such as these. So,
And listen, to add to that, you know, take care of yourself, right? If you're not getting that, and if you're not getting that for whatever reason there is, find yourself a doctor. Go get a physical. And this is what I tell a lot of the kids in my recruit classes out at the training center. I'm like, listen, what we do as firefighters, and especially as volunteer firefighters, is not normal. Like, you laying in bed with your wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, right, in the middle of the night, and then this thing goes off, right, that could wake the neighborhood at 2 a.m. in the morning, right? And you go from a resting heart rate of God knows what, you know, 40, 50, whatever it is, to over 100, you know, and you race out the door and you don't use that adrenaline. I mean, it's like what you guys are doing is not normal, right? It's not normal for your body. And if you don't know if your body is in good shape to handle this added stress, you need to know.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And that's why it's so important to prepare. You know, only 1% of a firefighter's time is really spent on, you know, active fire ground operations. So what are we doing with the other 99% of our time? Are we adequately preparing our bodies, our minds, our skills for that 1% where we really need to perform? So that's a good question that we all need to ask ourselves. How are we preparing for this job? Because it's not a desk job, you know, it's something that will open your eyes, especially if you're deconditioned or out of shape and you get on the fire ground. It's something that's definitely going to open your eyes if you haven't experienced it before. So I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about your personal life a little bit. I know you're a guy who, shall we say, has your hands in a lot of things, and I'm guilty of this too. But I know you're a family man. I know your faith is important to you also. But how do you personally maintain the right balance and the right perspective for what is truly important in life?
Well, I'll tell you, this is something I don't talk about or share a lot. Personal life and marriage and family has probably been where I have struggled the most. I'll just throw it out there. I mean, I have my wife probably should have sent me packing a long time ago. it has been a very long journey of learning how to be better at that, you know, learning how to be a good husband. And I have screwed up plenty of times, learning how to be a good dad. Just learning how to be present, and balancing all of this stuff, you know, balancing everything that life throws at you. My various jobs. And I work, like you said, I have my hands in a lot of different places, and it's calmed down over the last few years. I mean, there was times that, in addition to, you know, being a volunteer firefighter, I was working my full-time job, plus I was working like 3 part-time jobs and running a business, and it just craziness.
Yeah.
You know, finding that balance is important, you know, learning that again, being teachable, you know, I mean, sometimes you have to swallow that hard pill and realize you're not good at things. And, probably in the husband realm, that's been the hardest pill for me to swallow. And I think I've finally gotten it, but it's taken a long time and some pains and struggles to get there. But again, you feel blessed that you got people around you that stick around and love you and support you and are in for the long haul, you know?
I think it really comes back to our priorities, right? And if we don't have those right, then we're definitely going to go off the deep end, which, hey, I'm sure we all have at one point or another. If we're someone who's really active in the fire service, who's really active in the fire department and passionate about it, it's, you know, like you just said, it's all about finding the right balance, having the right prioritization in our own lives of what's truly important, and being present when we're present, right? So when you're home, be home, be present with your spouse, be present with your kids. And as I've had to learn over the years, being really intentional with your time with them, making sure that, you know, we're not spending all of our time on our phone or watching another screen. But if they're doing something, and if your kid or something asks you to help them with something, drop whatever you're doing and help them, you know, because that's going to really pay dividends in the long haul. And, you know, I'm not perfect, just like you said, you know, but it's we need to be teachable, and we need to make sure that we're able to have the right perspective and learn, and make sure that we put our family first before we put the fire department first, because the fire service will last, you know, a couple decades, maybe several decades. But our families is more important. It's going to last longer.
Well, and look, and that's the other thing, you know, and this is probably the biggest difference among the services, right? Mm-hmm. When a career guy is off shift, he or she is off shift,
right?
You know, and you can be off shift, or you should be able to be off shift. You know, when you're a volunteer and you're wearing that pager, or you have that phone in your pocket 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365. Sometimes it's hard to, you know, separate yourself. And, you know, I know that I missed some moments in my family and my kids' lives because you know, I ran out to that call, or because I had to be at that emergency, or, you know, because I'm so passionate and dedicated to what I do, you know, and look, my wife comes from a volunteer firefighting family. So she understood it coming in, you know, but look, there are things that I know I missed. And now looking back, you know, I'm kind of sad that I missed them. And I didn't have that realization back then that, you know, that there'll be another call tomorrow. Somebody else can take it up. Somebody else can handle it. You don't have to be there.
Yeah.
You know, you know, and that's hard to do.
It is hard. And it's hard to, you know, have that perspective of what's important at this moment. And what do I need to be present for? Is it for my public, or is it for my family right now? And, that's really hard choice to make, you know, in that moment.
You asked me about my faith journey, and you know, that's really new for me, you know, being transparent. And it came at a very good time. I mean, look, neither of my parents were what I would call religious people. Mm-hmm. They tried to enroll. I did Sunday school for a very short amount of time in my childhood at the local Catholic church. My wife and I had some struggles when we got married with the local Catholic church because of the, you know, the rules and, you know, some of the things that apply. And I'll never forget it. A few years ago, I was with friends out in California, and my one friend, I was waiting for her to take me back to the airport. And she says to me, "Hey, the kids were all excited about getting down to the church." And it blew my mind, really. I'm like, what's going on here? Like, I remember being that age, and, you know, I didn't, whatever. So she says to me, you know, we got a little while before I take you to the airport. You mind if I fire up my computer and just kind of watch service? I'm like, yeah, fire up the computer. Didn't know you could do that. I'm like, yeah, sure. Go right ahead. So she fires up, and I'm watching this thing. And geez, it looked like a rock show at my local concert, you know, and I'm like, what's going on here? You know, so whatever, came home, and it just was on my mind. And my wife and I ended up going to a place locally here that's very much the same. And, you know, I kind of won't forget it because, it was a totally different experience, you know, non-denominational, just, you know, faith-based, you know, I'll never forget walking into this place and listening to the pastor speak. And I'm like, you know, this is like a TED talk,
yeah.
You know, this is, I can buy into like, this is sure. There's Bible verses and there's this and there's that. And I'm like, but this is different. This is not what I've ever experienced in my life. And, that was, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. And we've been going pretty faithfully ever since. But, you know, I'm still not, you're not going to hear me quoting much. You know, I'm still not that guy. I'm not to that level yet. But I'll tell you, it's a part of my life that was definitely, I think, missing for a while and has really spoken to me over the last few years to help me deal with some of this adversity and family and marriage stuff.
Yeah. And I think it comes back to having a strong foundation,
yeah,
of what, you know, helps you see is truly important and gives you, sure, that right perspective on life. Because if you don't have that foundation, you're going to be tossed to and fro when the storms come and the challenges come. Yep. But if you can go back to your foundation, and for some, that can be faith, and some it might be something else.
Yep, but absolutely.
You got to have that strong foundation to lead you forward. So I got one last question for you. It'll help you kind of gauge your perspective on what has been important in the fire service and what you've learned over the last 3 decades. So if you could go back all over again and talk to your rookie self, what advice would you give yourself?
So I gotta tell you, as soon as I heard 3 decades, I was like, whoa, you know, because I have yet to accept that I'm where I am, right? It's still hard for me to accept that I'm in my 50s. It's still hard for me to accept that I've been doing this for over 30 years. And to see it written as 3 decades, I was like, oh my God. I'm like, you're old, guy. You know, but it blows my mind, and it's just been such a cool journey. I still don't look at myself like as this, like, one of the senior guys, and I definitely am, you know, but mm-hmm. But I still don't look at myself that way. You know, I think looking back at my rookie self, and we hit on a lot of it right in the opening questions, you know, all those points. Those are all things I would tell my rookie self, you know, about being teachable and this and that. Just, you know, just relax and enjoy it. Enjoy where you are. Never in a million years when I handed in that application 30 years ago did I think I would be doing the things that I'm doing today. I never would have imagined that the fire service would have opened the doors for me that it has opened as a volunteer firefighter, as somebody mm-hmm. that does not do this for a career. Okay. Regardless of where you are, regardless of whether you decide to go down the career path or you decide to be good at your day job and on the side, be good at being a volunteer firefighter. All right. Realize that does not limit you. You know, you can still be a leader. You can still be an instructor. You can still create a platform and share your passion with people that you don't know. All right. You can still be up on a Saturday morning talking to a guy named Jim Moss, you know, and sharing your journey. So just relax and enjoy it. And, you know, and the other thing is realize that you're not always right. Okay. You're not always right, and you never know it all.
Yeah,
those are the things that I would tell myself. You know, look, dude, you're not always right, and you definitely don't know it all. So, you know, realize that.
Awesome. Well, Chief Brian Soller, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for all you're doing for the fire service, and I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. So, let people know how they can connect with you and the Professional Brotherhood.
It's pretty simple. We're all over social media. So the Instagram handle is @professional.brotherhood. Facebook is @Chief Soller, and that'll get you to you know, all the social media pages. If you can't remember that and you just want to go to the web, professionalbrotherhood.com, and there's links to everything from professionalbrotherhood.com. And then I love engaging. It's part of this ride that has been so amazing for me is meeting people and having people share their experiences with me. Sometimes they ask for advice. Sometimes they give advice. So, you know, please reach out to me if you have a question, an idea, a thought, professionalvff@gmail.com. So again, thank you, Jim. Really, really appreciate the opportunity and always love talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Chief. And to all those out there listening, stay fit, stay safe, and remember, when lives depend on us, success is our only option. Thanks for listening to the Firefighter Success Podcast. Go to firefightersuccessbook.com to learn more about the book, Firefighter Success, 20 C's to Firefighter Excellence. At the website, you can also download the free special report, 101 Rules for Firefighter Success.